Welcome to the Great Base Tennis Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Fitzell, alongside Steve Smith. This is episode 16. And in this episode, we're talking with junior tennis player Spencer Johnson. And also, we'll touch base with his father as well, Joey Johnson.
Yeah, Joey Johnson. Joey Johnson was a student, Tyler Junior College, early 80s. Be fun to hear his story. He makes his living as a mental toughness coach. His book is Worthy to Win. What a great title. Yeah. Are you worthy to win? But with Spencer, he's been part of our program for some time. Just signed with UCLA, so congratulations to Spencer. But during the pandemic, we called Spencer up because he spent so much time with us. A full-time, part-time student. I mean, he spent months at a time with us. Spencer Johnson, son of Joey and Wendy. But it'll be fun to talk to him. But he, during the pandemic, he spoke to a group of students. And we're going to go through some of the same points tonight, which I think would be very good for juniors, parents, and coaches to hear. Junior players.
Yeah, and Spencer just recently signed a letter of intent to play for UCLA.
UCLA.
Bruins.
So yeah, let's call him up.
Get him on the line.
From Utah. Not too many players go from Utah to UCLA, although years ago, Brad Pierce, but yeah. I think you know Brad. Mm-hmm. I believe he went down to live in California by the time he was in the 16s.
Makes sense.
Yeah, the quarterfinals of Wimbledon. I'm going to guess it was 1990, Brad Pierce.
Yeah, back in the day a little bit. All right.
I did a PTR. I was speaking at PTR many years ago. And
sorry.
He was there. Brad Pierce hits the ball really well.
Yeah.
Spoke together, talked to him a few times. Dialing for dollars. Nobody's home.
Joey? Joey?
Yep.
Hey, how are you?
How are you?
Welcome
doing great.
Welcome to the show. We call this a show, our Great Base Tennis Podcast.
Number 16.
And we got Spencer on the line as well, correct?
Yes, I'm here, Coach.
All right. Glad to have you on. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, we just going to talk to you tonight, Spencer. We have your dad chime in, Papa Bear, a little bit to start off with. But then we're going to have part one, part two. The next week, we'll talk to Joey in great length. But Joey, why don't you lead off? Just tell us a few things that are on your mind to get started, and we'll start interrogating your son.
Well, first of all, it's a pleasure to be able to talk with you and Andy. We, you know, it's there's been some great experiences over the years, and in working with you, Steve, and as of late with Andy, and there's a lot of wisdom and knowledge that you have that has been a great benefit to Spencer as well as a lot of other players that I've worked with over the years. And so this is a privilege for us. So I think that one thought, I know we're going to focus on him. I think one of the things from my perspective has been in the training that I do on the mental side, you know, is just really trying to instill the concept that players, including Spencer, of course, that they feel worthy and they feel deserving of success. And of course, that means they have to do certain things in order to earn that. But I think there's a deep belief that and a power behind that belief when someone really feels worthy of something and they're willing to go to great lengths to get it. So that's been kind of an overarching philosophy and concept that, you know, he and I have talked about throughout the years. But in addition to all the different things that you're probably going to talk to him about as far as developing his game. So
that's
there's
great.
A couple thoughts.
I've heard Steve say many times when he's talking about it in a player and he goes, well, you know what? That player is really not living their life to win that match. And I think that's another way to say, you know, they're not worthy of winning that match because of the way, you know, they're not doing the daily routines or the things they're supposed to do on a regular basis to win. You know, you're not living your life to win that match. So I like that. And obviously that phrase worthy to win is cool.
Well, I think also too, John Wooden, never mentioned the word winning, the great late John Wooden, who obviously, Spencer, you go to UCLA. Congratulations again on that. Where you go into this.
Thank you.
I'm sure when you took a campus tour, you saw the pyramid of success with winning. People just really in junior tennis. We'll get to go into that, but they get so hung up on winning, so outcome oriented instead of the performance. Yeah.
The process.
Yeah, love the process. The process will love you back.
Yeah.
Spencer, let's start. I'll ask you a question on your family. I was talking to a mom and a dad today. Their son is here, an Irish kid, and he's the youngest of six, and I'm the youngest of six, and I always say the best comes last. The father said he's number six out of eight, so I'll have to give him the gears on not being the best. But you're the youngest of five, right?
Yes.
So let me ask you a question. Do you think the youngest child is spoiled? I get that doesn't have to be a yes or no answer. You can elaborate.
I mean, in a way, both, I'd say. From my experience, I think you'll see parents be a little more relaxed on their kids the later the generation. Because that's kind of happened to me. They may get a little more relaxed, but in a way, they're not as all over you. So it really just depends on how you look at it.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it really just depends on your family and what your parents are looking to do with you as a kid.
Certainly a lot of variables or the complexities, the gender, the age. I tell people that I had eight in the family. I had three sets of parents because I had one easygoing brother. So that means besides my parents, I had two sisters and two brothers that were giving me advice.
I remember the comedian Jim Gaffigan talking something about, having a fifth kid is like when you have four kids, you're in the water, and then someone hands you a fifth kid.
Yeah, the punchline is when your mom had child number five, it's like you're treading water, you're swimming, and someone hands you a baby. I do think that it's a really interesting scenario, the set of circumstances. A lot of times the older siblings, they set a path for the younger ones to follow.
Right.
But I think with larger families, there's more lessons to learn because, I know, and my father would be upset with one of my older brothers. It was like, we're all in trouble.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your beginning with us. You remember the toy? What was the name of that toy?
It was a green kendama.
And
you might have to explain what a kendama is to our listeners.
It's like a yo-yo. How would you describe it?
It's made out of wood. It's a little handle. You hold on to it, and it's got a string attached to a ball, and there's cups on the handle, and you try to land the ball in the cups.
Yeah, they are addicting.
So you were 11, and my advice to you was give it away. Go back to your lovely neighborhood and maybe initially I told you to throw it in the wastebasket, but you weren't going to do that. So I said, well, when you get home, just give it to a younger kid in the neighborhood. I remember we had some kids who just had a head start compared to you. I think of Victor Lilov is one who, he's obviously just a little younger than you. And, he's won a national title or two, an international title or two.
Yeah.
And you were kind of starstruck by Victor and some of the other players. But I remember just trying to tell you they simply had started the game before you. If Andy had this question, what would you tell your 12-year-old self, 11-year-old self?
Yeah.
Looking back.
You were to give your 12-year-old self some advice.
If I could look back and just sit down with myself, I'd tell myself that tennis is it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And, you know, the really important things are the 10 minutes, you know, 10 minutes, 10 months, 10 years of, you know, doing routines off the court. Cause, I've seen so many kids, and I've seen this happen to my friends where they'll get really good, really young. And, you know, people say getting good young's a curse, cause you can get entitled and prideful. And, I think growing up in Utah, you know, I didn't have to worry about any of those, you know, due to the fact that it was just me and my dad most of the time out on the court. And, you know, the most important advice is just, you know, no matter where you are and what position you are, you know, it's a marathon. It's all about, you know, having the routine every day. You know, sometimes, you know, being as a young kid who's lacking discipline, you'll see kids be really motivated for 2 to 3 weeks at a time, and then the next 2 to 3 weeks there's nothing going on. So it's that consistency. I think if I could go back and tell myself, having that consistency in your training is very important.
Yeah, you got to have that long-term vision and then deal with the daily process.
With you know, your dad's helped us with camps and brought many times groups of players to work with us. I know that you worked with us in North Carolina at a camp. You worked with us in Ohio, Tennessee, Florida, of course, but Germany. Your dad helped us run a camp. I mean, actually, that's where Andy met his wife Leo. Andy came in and. And we had 25 players from 9 states, David Squires Club in Dusseldorf.
Yeah.
It's a great way. It's actually the easiest way to monitor players is, you know, the girls go to the left, the boys go to the right. You just get air mattresses and sleep on the tennis hall.
I never slept better in my entire life. no, that was a good time.
But how old were you then? You remember that camp? What age would you have been?
It was 2015.
I had to have been 13 at that point.
Yeah.
So we need to get you back on the red clay. What are your memories from that camp?
Well, I remember, you know, there's a lot of kids. You know, we were some kids from California. I just remember, you know, seeing you pick up on these kids I'd spent a lot of time with, and you just figured out things about them in an instant. And it was, you know, I was like, this guy's the real deal, you know. I just remember spending hours learning on the clay court how to slide and how to move. Spent a lot of time just working on my ability to rally out there. It was a very cool experience. I was very lucky to have the opportunity to go out there. And, you know, it was great. I was thankful that, you know, I'm thankful that you gave me that chance to go out there. Very cool experience to be with people from other countries. It was very interesting.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of kids in the U.S., they don't really get that exposure. One of the E's we talk about of player development is one is exposure to see, you know, not only tennis in another country, but different cultures, you know, how you take a train, all those kinds of things, different services. But it's awesome that you were able to get that opportunity at such a young age as well.
Yeah, just the food. Yeah, the 5 E's. Enjoyment, it's not hit and giggle enjoyment. Serious fun, serious goals. Try to become the best you can be. But it's certainly enjoyment. Then education, experience, exposure in your overall environment. With the... I think of a time in Miami, you're there to play the qualifier for the Orange Bowl. Talk about international tournaments, a lot of kids from all over the world. And I remember you lost to a young girl, 6-love, and you were like, hey, coach, can I play her tomorrow? And I remember Johnson, it doesn't work that way. You know, we're playing matches with these group of players from a couple academies, and she's going to move up and play somebody who won, and you're going to move down. With brain typing, you're both a thinker and a feeler. Thinkers can feel and feelers can think. Where do you think you are with being a thinker or feeler? Is that changed? Is it something that's still a factor?
Yeah, for sure. It's still a factor. You know, myself, I actually worked on brain typing a lot with Jeremy Neitnagel. And, you know, he's saying I'm an ENTP and, you know, getting into that. I'm definitely still a feeler, but, you know, I'm still, you know, in some ways I'd say I think a lot. It's always tough because, you know, you can do both in so many ways, but, I'd say I was able to learn more about it by talking to Jeremy and, you know, work through some of the things, you know, like for me personally on the court, I can get distracted easily. You know, I'm extroverted. I'm, you know, my brain type says I'm creative. I'm inanimate, but, you know, it's the best way that I was able to figure out some things was able to you know, just educate myself and just learn more about how I operate.
Yeah, so it's very common. A lot of ENTPs are left-handed, which you are.
Mm-hmm.
ENTP, college campuses, the Myers-Briggs put together by a mother and daughter in the 50s. The descriptor for that is you're a planner. Roger Federer's down as an ENTP, so you're in good,
Pete Sampras?
Good company with, but you know, a lot of times we go through the training is when you find out what your brain type is, ENTP, it's like, okay, I want to try to flip it. So I want to really try to act more like an introvert, meaning that you're, some extroverts, if someone walks through the gate, all the extroverts turn to see who walks in and then also on the other end of it, for example, to be a P, a perceiver, where you know, you really like more of a flexible schedule than a structured schedule. Easygoing, like, okay, Johnson, we're going to go to the beach. Mm-hmm. And you'd be like, yeah, okay. Not that that happened when you were here, but so to try to, okay, I know I'm a P, but to act more like a J. What about on motor programming with ENTP?
Yeah, I mean,
Well, actually, let me ask you. Well, you go ahead. Andy can answer this too, but I should identify who I was asking.
No, I think it'd be great to hear what.
Go ahead, Johnson.
What Jeremy had to say to you, what advice he gave.
Well, he was telling me, you know, my brain type is more fine motor skill than upper body. You know, I am right brained and, I play my best when I'm, you know, loose. And a lot of the things he had me work on were when I was playing a tennis match, he would say, you want to have a song stuck in your head that doesn't have words, like humming a tune. He would have me, he tells me I need to, you know, pick an object in the distance that's interesting to me. You know, it could be a palm tree or a cloud. And, you know, I'd, you know, when I'm keep my eyes on that when I'm not playing so I don't get distracted. For me, a lot of it was keeping my mind occupied, but at the same time it was pretty empty.
Yeah, I remember Vic Braden used to talk about your type and he would say, well, if the teacher comes into the classroom and says, okay, today class we're going to talk about airplanes, the kids with your type, as soon as they hear the word airplane, they've already flown around the world 9 times and landed in 3 cities within their mind. And then the teacher goes, now turn to page 1. And so, you know, a lot of times those kind of extroverted kids that are intuitive thinkers, you know, their brains are going to go a million miles a minute. And so they're oftentimes prescribed drugs to calm them down. But it's really, you know, you've got to find ways like Jeremy was doing with you to help you with your type and, you know, in a productive way like that. You know, with the P, you're going to spatially see the field better. You're going to tend to have more fluidity than a J would. But obviously, you know, you still have to work those mechanics in and being on the more fine motored side, which an NT tends to be more of, you know, you can use that to your advantage, but also you got to work on your gross motor skills. So then you got to work on, on using the large muscle groups of your body as well.
So Andy, Spencer. So Andy, he would think that he could play more with his hands, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the NTs really, the STs are the ones that are really fine motor dominant, and that they'll add that little, as Vic Braden used to say, that they'll add the extra sauce. But yeah, the NT is more on the fine dominant side. So yeah, the tendency is to want to use from the finger to the elbow a little bit more. So you have to be careful with those things, but also you can use that to your advantage, just like you see like a Pete Sampras or a Roger Federer. I believe Jeremy and John also typed Djokovic as an ENTP and maybe even Nadal.
Yeah, no, I remember reading all that. All three of them. All three. So,
but we're going to get into, listeners, we're going to get into brain typing here in a few weeks and go through that as well.
With that's for the listeners, Andy, why don't you, say a few things about John and then his son, Jeremy.
No, so John, John Niednagel, obviously he's taken brain typing to another level as far as getting into inborn design, genetics, and then taking it into, where the athletics come involved with the motor skills more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. And then Jeremy's, really following in his dad's footsteps. Again, in that episode, we'll go further in depth with all that, but it's pretty awesome stuff. And all the research is really shown that there's 16 inborn designs. Innately, and then obviously there's the nurture side of things. So how you your environment or the way you grow up.
Well, Johnson, I guess I have to apologize because there's many times where I said, I thought you had no brain. Let's go to nicknames for a minute. I always tell people that you have to be, I was saying over 60, but now I'm going to have to say close to 70 because I'm closer to 70 to 60. But let's go through some of your nicknames. I like this one. Let me ask if you remember A Little Dabble, Do You? Do you remember that? A Little Dabble,
yes,
Do
Yes, I do remember that.
Andres Barbosa, nice guy, putting a group of us up at his parents' house. Tennis coach in Miami, and his brother JT, they run Tropical Park where we're playing. So you show up and you didn't have, because when you were really young, you put a little, what would you call it?
Oh,
in the hair.
Oh, hair gel. Oh, you're stylish.
I really should never talk about hair jokes, but so you show up and you didn't have the Little Dabble, Do You? There used to be a commercial, Little Dabble, Do You, back in the 60s. And I gave you a hard time. I go, Johnson, you knew you were coming over here today. You knew I was going to give you a hard time about your hair, and you didn't go with A Little Dabble, Do You?
Little Dabble, Do You.
So the nicknames. How about this one? Brian Clark, great guy, great family. They run a club up in Cincinnati, and we just did a camp at his place. Runs a really, really nice indoor club with his brother Steve. You remember what your nickname was that week?
Not so bright assistant.
Yeah. So the kids in the camp, you had the most experience with the group, and we come in and I'd have you demo right hand and left hand, and I'd ask you questions. You were young and shy and turning red when I asked you the question. And every time you came in, I've talked to your mother so many times on the phone. I haven't met your mother in person all these years, but, I know that there was another name, besides Little Dabble, Do You?
We got the
not so bright assistant, but your mother was really happy when she found out I was calling you what name?
It was a puppy dog.
Golden Retriever.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Then when I found out that your mother would every once in a while say you're being such a puppy, and then I started giving your father a hard time saying, sounds like Wendy should be the one who's the mental toughness coach. So who's tougher on you, your mom or your dad?
That's
not a simple answer either.
It's pretty close now. I'd say I spend less time with Wendy, and Wendy really gives it to me straight in a quicker amount of time. So
no, I've always thought that Joey was more of a teddy bear than a grizzly bear. It's good to have both. You actually need both. You can't just have one. And you know, people think of me as a teddy bear. You know that, Johnson.
Yeah.
Now, people listening should realize that in our world, we never use the word Spencer. And I know some people know why. Could you tell us why we just call you Johnson? Could you tell us where you got that nickname?
Well, we were in Memphis, and there was an incident that happened, you know, with a bagel from Panera, and we say that Spencer died that day.
Well, the incident, I think you have to go into more detail. Like you were an incident. It was like it was a crime.
Yeah, there was an incident.
I don't want to mention any names, but Arush Ganji, he bought a bagel that had more sugar than Mount Everest on it. And I just said, you guys, get over here. And I said, no one can buy that bagel anymore.
Yeah.
It reminded me of a Saturday Night Live where it's the Bears, the Bears. So the Michael Bears. Jordan is talking, Chris Farley.
Yeah.
And he's just, you know, him and a couple others, the Bears fans. And he's just going, the Bears. Michael Jordan, he just sounds out.
Yeah.
So I know when I was giving you the gears, all of you the gears on sugar, sugar is a drug. Mm-hmm. You didn't hear my voice. You just kept going, that bagel.
Yeah.
That bagel. So right as I got done, our listeners should realize that Johnson got up. He went to the counter. And Johnson, he's an easygoing guy. I mean, he was not a rebel by any means, but he goes up and he buys the bagel. And I'm just going, no, no, no. But that's one of those things where you'll never live down. But I mean, I try not to let nicknames stick. I always, when I have used a nickname and then some kid uses the same nickname, I go, no, 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 no. With our podcast, I think if people listen to our podcast, they'll find out it's not a magazine. It's going to be more of a book, and it's all interconnected. Like, yeah. So Dave Anderson, who spoke as a guest, his father used to say, don't throw stones if you live in a glass house. I use that all the time when one kid will start to use a nickname. I go, no, 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 no. That's where you have to be an old man with no hair to use a nickname.
So how are you doing now, Spencer, with your diet? When's the last time you had a donut?
I haven't had a donut for a while.
Since this morning? Certainly.
no, been a while. My diet has certainly improved over the years.
Yeah, that's great.
With,
got to be super fit.
Let's go to, the telephone call. What do we tell kids they need to do when they get up in the morning?
You need to do 50-50. You need to do 50 push-ups, 50 sit-ups.
Very good. Now, I had a couple students, and their father had played in the NFL. And, you know, we've told people, yeah, it could be 10 push-ups, 10 squat thrusts, 10 sit-ups, you know, even just 5 push-ups. But you do that before you go to the bathroom in the morning. Then you make your bed. We have a lot of content to look at. Tell us about our content. We don't want to have kids on social media, but here's a question that, if you were talking to a group of the players that we work with, and you know, for example, you've probably met, from Steve Roberts' program, Enon and Mateo.
I've met Mateo.
Those two guys are both here, and Matt Clore is hitting with him tonight, and you know he just said Steve Roberts can teach tennis. Guys hit the ball really well, but so tell us a little bit about what you're supposed to do with the content. What comes to your mind?
Well, there's a lot of content. I mean, you know, this is where the information is. There's tennis intelligence applied. There's Great Base Initiative. There's how to practice at home. There's how to use the Great Base backboard, and you know, there's you know the building blocks, and you know, it's available, you know, for people to read now, and I think it's really important to do, you know, to watch the content. You know, the content, you can learn how to become a coach. You can learn how to be a player. It's really important.
No, it's great to have Andy and his wife Leo here. Really, they're really improving our our reach and trying to share information that we've acquired over the years. There's actually a new one that is called what, Andy, the player development course? Or
yeah, we've got a it was an assignment from the USC High Performance Program, but the player development assignment.
And then Facebook, we have put up over 10 years of content. One of our students who passed away, unfortunately, Eric Oberhammer, he had leukemia and he wanted to start a Tennis with Facebook as he was bedridden. Yeah. And then within a month, he passed away, but we put up something every day since.
Yeah.
And I can remember one time, you know, like I would have, for like five of them in a row, I put a PS, Spencer Johnson, if you've read this, call me today. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember that.
And then some nice mom, she crushed it, called you up, said, Spencer, I think you need to go to Facebook. Because the days went by and some mom came to your rescue.
So you missed a few days.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, you know, the Facebook, you know, supposed to look at it every day. I mean, you know, I missed a couple of days, but Facebook's, your guys' Facebook's a great place just to, you know, learn something new every day.
Well, we tell parents too, is that the parents might want to just look at it. And then on the weekend when they, because academics, kids' homework should come first, but it's amazing. There's people that I've never met in person. I can just tell when I talk to them on the phone. You know, I know you've worked with Petrus Kookymore. He brought, you know, 20 plus kids from South Africa and we ran a camp at Dave Anderson's place. Dave Anderson worked with me for 8 years. I mean, 3 years, day in and day out, but no, actually 4 years, but then because it was 3 years at one place, then it was in Florida. But he had autonomy at these clubs, but it was, you know, right in the next town over. So we really worked together. And so so he met Petrus. He just watched Petrus work and he goes, oh, he's already worked with you before. I said, no, I've never met him. I met him an hour before you. I picked him up at the airport. But so that it's really, it's fun when people realize that, use my name in third person, it's not Steve Smith stuff. Here are some things that, you know, we get someone like Spencer on the phone and it just, yes or no. How are you doing with 10 minutes of yoga every day?
I wouldn't say it's happening 100% every day, but it's a routine. You know, I do stretch every day. It's not perfect yet though.
Remember the, we call him Rami Baby, the superstar intern that went to Germany with us.
Yeah.
I mean, he was so young and helped out in so many ways. He's a superstar. He went through the 10 minutes of yoga that we did every day at that camp, and he continues to do it every day.
Yeah.
And that's where he's a superstar. The notes in a journal, you take notes in practice, you write a journal, then you have some reflective thought. How are you doing with that? You find time to just sit down and go, okay, what do I need to accomplish today? How are the journaling? How is Johnson doing with that?
I have been, you know, I do journal quite a lot now. It's really important for players so they can have, you know, so they can build reflective thought. That's a really important part about improving. I'd say it's, you know, I do journal a lot now. It's part of my routine.
So in journaling, what would you be writing when you go from high altitude to sea level? Would you make that change? You have to actually, you know, what's more difficult, to go from sea level to high altitude to sea level? You've obviously done
well. A lot of that. I mean, yeah, I've done a lot of that in my day. You know, going from high altitude to sea level, it's really important to, you know, have air targets. It's really important to stay in the rally because in high altitude you can blast balls by people, but you go back to low altitude, you know, those shots aren't winners anymore. You really have to work the point, and you learn to construct points a lot more. And then you know, going from sea level to high altitude, it gives you a chance to be more aggressive and put pressure on people. So I tell myself, try to finish points at the net, finish points in a point ending situation.
What about string tension? You use different string tension? You keep notes on that?
Yeah. So, when I'm in Utah, I'll string my rackets at around like 55 pounds. And then when I'm in low altitude, I'll string them around 51 pounds.
With some other things I have on this list, clipboard by the TV. I mean, are you charting? It's nice to see a kid who's watching the tennis channel and they say, okay, we're just going to chart 10 points. And there's so many different ways to chart, but we use that simple T chart from Bill Jacobson's program years and years ago. Are you doing any charting, like even of your own matches?
Yes, I do. I started filming my own matches. I got a camera and, I reflect and I chart my matches now.
Great. What about the, we have the daily monitoring program, where now we call it the Great Base 8. So you do the 8 essential strokes.
DMP.
And then a simple exercise of your choice. Have you been keeping up on that as far as the daily routine goes?
No, I haven't.
You blow it.
I've been blowing it on the DMP. I really think I need to start doing that now. I just haven't owned it yet. I've been a 2 and not a 1 with the DMP, and I think I need to get back on track with that, and make it a priority, like looking at the Facebook post or doing my routine.
Yeah, I think we tell people, obviously Steve can talk about this, if you're a 1 or a 2, basically are you in or are you out? But I was telling your dad, and for the listeners at home, let's just say you're trying to get better at anything, but you want to try to set up your environment for success. So if you're trying to, let's say, make a goal of, hey, I need to shadow swing more, just having your racket out and ready, or one racket out and ready next to a mirror, just so it's like, hey, you could be walking by, pick up your racket and do shadow swings. Or if it's, hey, I need to jump rope more, okay, I'm going to have my jump rope right here in the garage. So I'll have an area where I could just walk by, start jumping rope. So whether it's you have
to... On that note,
yeah.
I just bought a tripod and I'm going to set it up. So it's there. So I'll make sure to do the DMP every day.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing. Ones are all in. Twos are not all in. Mm-hmm. But with the DMP, obviously you've progressed. You put a lot of years in already and you're still young. I mean, you're 17, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, just 7 more years, you're still 24. It's just a random number, but someone like yourself, you really should do DMP. Rabbi, teach by example, be the example with, so other kids could see you do it. And it would be, you don't yourself, you'll benefit by doing DMP, but it's more to help others. Yeah. The kids that, were like you, a beginner and had to go up in the game.
I think, going back to brain typing just a little bit, when you're a P, you're not going to tend to have, structure automatically. You're not going to, need that closure and structure. You want to just go with the flow. I'm a P and kind of wing it day by day. But that's where it's important to go, okay, here's the non-negotiables. These are the things I need to do every day. Make a list, make a chart.
Yeah.
And then you can check those off at the end of the day. You can take inventory. So as you move forward, in your career, as we say that, your tennis journey, keep going with that journal stuff and keep making those mini plans for each day.
As an older player of doing the Great Base, something, I can always work on is my leadership qualities, definitely need to get better. And a way to improve that would be, doing the DMP and showing people that, you, no matter how old you are, you should be doing the DMP. So that's, I'm going to get on that.
No, that's well stated. Yeah. I mean, one, to lead is initially just do it by example instead of doing it by voice.
Yeah.
With Wendy and Joey feeding a family of five. They've spent a few dollars on groceries, so we know you're hungry for food. If you could just, and that's a mind vitamin we use all the time. Hungry dog hunts best. Is you got to think of these things as food. Some of it you don't have to do. Like we, I mean, there's some things that are extreme. Like, hey, you've lost to somebody. Make a list of the people you've lost to. I mean, you can put it on the refrigerator door. We know you're going to go to the refrigerator, and there's somebody that you really want to beat. You know, maybe, you know, put it where you brush your teeth and you're looking in the mirror, but to just write that down. And I do think, you know, the room next to our podcast room is the chess room, and kids play chess. And when a kid plays a chess match and they lose, it's like, okay, you're better than me.
Yeah.
They play a tennis match and lose, and they're like, okay, I'll beat you tomorrow. And usually it's like, no, I got to go work on some things.
Yeah.
How about the skip rope routine? You share with the listeners the boxer's routine. You know that answer?
Yes. So 12 minutes. It's 3 minutes on, 1 minute off. I've been doing the routine a lot more with coaches, you know, keep telling me to do that. You know, for me, I've been growing a lot. I'm 6'3" in my legs. You know, I really need to start improving the way I use my legs. My brain type's more upper body dominant. You know, I wouldn't say I do that every day, but I do that quite a bit. But I just, you know, there's so many routines within the Great Base that it's really important to be able to try to make them all permanent. And, you know, that one for me is, it's not permanent, but I do it a lot.
That's great. Johnson, you're 6'3". You're almost as tall as me now. It's good. I heard this from Dave Anderson. I steal jokes. Johnson and I get along really well. He's 6'3", he's 6'3", but my ego's 6'5", so we're all set. Hey, that comes from Jack Kramer. You know, it comes from boxers. That's where Jack Kramer said he felt like he'd play anybody in the world, but he would go 15 rounds. And he just rested in between, but he went really hard. I know the coaches, what they should do is, you know, put eight players in a row and say, okay, do squat thrust, and then go behind them and then film and then go back and chart that. Don't just chart points. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. You know, some kids have already done three before some kids done their first one, you know, anything that can be measured can be improved, but, and also too, how you skip rope. I think if David Squire sent this guy to us, he plays for Harvard now. Henry von Schnellenberger, American kid who grew up in Zurich, and he came, he was 8 years old, and Squire said he'll be able to do 80 double jumps, and sure enough, he did 80 double jumps. Mm-hmm. Coach Ilya, who works with us, he's very clever, very creative in teaching people how to do double jumps, but to get better at it. But the skip rope routine, even if you just did one, you know, you're busy with school, you got this going, you just have to do one. I think of a player we worked with just briefly, but it was, if I had a wish list, I'd put him way at the top. It was a kid by the name of Scott Stewart. His father's a cross country coach. And, you know, he ended up playing at the University of Texas. Great competitor. Also wish we had helped him with his strokes when he was a young kid. But his father wanted him to run a mile every day regardless. You know, he could jog it. And I just remember him having a temperature like 104. And he goes, I got to run a mile. But, you know, many times the group he was with, they would be leaving and he would say, hey, could you carry my bag? I'll catch up with you guys. And he'd just go run a mile. Wow, that's great. But what, you know, if you do the 3 minutes on, 1 minute off, the younger players can do 3 minutes, ideally do that in front of a mirror, then shadow swing for a minute. And then really be to have the brain to be switched on. A switched on kid, they're going to grow myelin at a faster rate. How about mirror? How about mirror training? You get that pretty face of yours in the mirror at all?
I do. In my backyard, I shadow in front of the mirror. You know, the thing about the routines is, you know, like most kids, I'd say I'd get more focused when I know I have when I have competition coming up, and that's when you'll probably see me do my routines, you know, every day. But I think, you know, just it's all about, you know, just learning. And, you know, I'm working on this is, you know, just having the maturity and the discipline of having that, you know, that match day mentality every day, because every day is a tennis match.
That's good. Mirror training. Obviously, you can do it in a window. Certain time of day, you can actually see your shadow. You know, that comes from golf. You think of the baseball player getting the on-deck circle, the golfer. The animal kingdom. How many frog jumps does it take you to get to the net now, Johnson?
I haven't measured that one, Coach.
Your voice kind of faded away there a little bit. I tell kids we had one player. I just say we had one individual. He almost got up there three jumps, but it was a group from Japan. It was a physical trainer that was a decathlete, and he almost got up there in three jumps. But wow. our listeners, the animal kingdom, you know, we do the bear walk and we do the inchworm and yeah. the swan and the kangaroo and the spider. And I think what happens is people forget those. That's why it's so important to have a journal. And also, too, with training, you want to shock your body some. You don't want to get into the routine where you're just always doing the same exercises.
Yeah.
P90X, sure. Right? Are you yeah. guys familiar with P90X?
Muscle confusion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about your day? Do you start in the gym and end in the gym?
It's a trick question, Johnson. No, I don't.
Fill in the blank.
Just put your bed in the gym and then you can say, yeah.
Fill in the blank. I read in the book, Championship Teacher, you're not supposed to give your students any hints. Like this would not be right. a good thing to do.
Your body's a built-in gym.
There you go, Johnson. So every day you can start in the gym and end in the gym. And, this is what I'm going to do with my body. We tell people from Atomic Habit, you know, always have extra reading, even if it's just two pages from a book. And put the book on your pillow. We have a lot of players right now reading the book Amazing Racers. It's about a group of high school cross-country boys and girls, Central New York, Bill Harris. One thing, Johnson, we try some things that fail. You remember the times in the van where I was trying to get a group of you to do the vocabulary list?
Yes, I totally remember that.
Yeah. With, tournament, research and organization, you know, helping your father out, you know, with, what tournaments you can play, what's going on, especially with, more and more UTR events being played. Backboard. Tell us a little bit about the portable backboard. I know you had one of those growing up. You hit 40 balls in a minute. How did the young Johnson do with the portable backboard?
You know, the backboard, you know, I still have the same one today. Eventually I did log in. A lot of balls hit on the backboard, but you know, I'd say when I was really young, when I first got it, I didn't appreciate it or realize that, you know, whoever does the most amount of reps is probably going to become the best player. And, you know, it wasn't till, you know, I got a little older, you know, I realized the importance of, you know, the reps and the quality of the reps. And now, you know, I'd say the backboard's one of the most important things that I use every day.
Yeah, you can hit 40 balls in a minute. It's great for, you know, footwork, fitness, and really forehands and backhands. You can do some things, play a set against it, serve into it. I know Ilya's taking it up to now it's the all-in-one backboard where you can shadow swing your serve off a ball string that comes down to where your toss would be.
Yeah, volley on the back.
Volley in the back. But Andy, why don't you tell him, Johnson, what you're doing today with Rami Baby, the new...
With the all-in-one backboard, they are creating an app. So it'll be a rep counter for all the different exercises that you can do with it. So you'll attach it with your phone and it'll count the reps. So that'll be fun when that gets up.
I think also for the parents listening, you mentioned you're buying a tripod. I think when parents come home, they're busy, you know, a lot of times, so mom will come in the house and she's just multitasking. She's putting groceries away, starting dinner, switching laundry. She knows what every kid needs to do with their homework. But, you know, the young tennis player, it's their academics and their extracurricular, but to set up a tripod and do some routines in front of that. How about the being a spot server? Can you tell the group we're putting you on the spot here? Stan Smith, I've heard him many decades now do this. I think it's a great presentation. The 72 serves. Where do you get the 72 serves?
Well, you know, we talked about on each side, there's three places you can stand. You know, there's a flat serve, there's a kick serve, there's a slice serve, and then you have, correct me if I'm wrong, is there four targets on the right. serving?
Yeah, you got it. So 3 times 3 is 9, times 4 is 36.
Teacher, what are you doing?
Where do we get to 72, though, Johnson?
What are you doing?
Oh, I gave it to him? I'm too soft. I'm always told I'm too soft. I'm so soft.
Yeah, well, you know, there's 36 combinations, and there's two sides, so you get 72.
I think you've got a chance.
Got a chance, yeah. With here's something. Do you chart your screen time? The telephone is the enemy. I've busted you a few times when you were younger playing video games.
No, do you chart your screen time? I could be wrong.
Yes, I do.
You liar. No, maybe that's great. Do you have an app or do you just check your phone for the different things? Because I know they do that.
Yeah, I think my phone tells me what my screen time is.
Yeah.
Oh, the parents should be all over that. It's amazing when people start doing it, and they're five plus hours a day.
Yeah.
5+ hours a day. You know, it's just like, you know, people my age, it's like, okay, I'm just going to sit in front of the TV all day. You know, you don't play tennis with your thumbs.
yeah.
It's like YouTube can be a plus or it can be a minus. We always say YouTube clips, potato chips, you can't just one. How about filming yourself? You film yourself much?
Matches or practices?
Yes, I do. I have a GoPro now, and I film my matches.
That's great. You chart everyone? We talked about charting briefly, but do you go back and watch the matches with Joey or your dad? And
yeah, we go back and we critique, and you know, we keep track of statistics.
You know, I know you're working right now with other great bass players. And, I mean, I could name TJ and Alex and Zach and Aiden and whoever else. Sydney, your dad obviously cares about those players and talks to me on a regular basis about them. With just getting groups of three, one person feeds, one person hits, one person's films. You know, Andy's always emphasizing it'd be best if you could just film, if you can only film one angle, film from behind and see how far your racket's getting below the ball, how far you are away from your body. I mean, is your body just like you're throwing off ground strokes, serves as well? Is it just like you're throwing a medicine ball and you see the body snap upward where you translate the energy from the ground reaction force up? That's good.
I do find myself, I do feel myself at practice a lot, especially on the serve. I do film my strokes quite a bit.
That's great.
Yeah, you know, we have some toys here. I say that we, you know, equipment to practice with. And a lot of it, when you really look at it, it's not that expensive. But the sliding board, mm-hmm. we're always telling kids, mm-hmm. you know, just you could even put it in front of a portable backboard, but to shadow swing, you're shadow swinging open stance, you know, your shadow swing where you're swinging upward, where it's an off-pace passing shot. So I think a lot of people who have a quick glance at the great basic that we're always just doing the traditional, conventional, you know, where you, every time you can hit the ball off your left foot and hit the ball perfectly.
Yeah, yeah.
With a couple things on a test, why don't you tell our listeners, Johnson, I just got four questions here for you, so you can get a 25, a 50.
Here we go.
A 75 or 100. And Andy's got some toys. Why don't you give us the applause on your new gadget over there, Andy?
Well, we've had this gadget for a while, but we haven't used some of these. Do you know any simple, clean jokes, Johnson?
Oh, you want to hear laughter?
Well, we could.
Why is 6 afraid of 7?
So we got this, for example. Usually when Steve comes in with a little dad humor, then we give him a little.
Yeah, people don't laugh at my jokes, Johnson. I'm really struggling. 6, why is 6 afraid of 7? 7, 8, 8.
And that's great.
for the birds. That's for the birds, huh?
Give them the crickets on that one.
But let's go with Johnson. Let's just see if we got the applause button.
That's this one here. Let's see. Oh, it's the laughter.
Laughter. Yeah, I'd like to get laughter.
All right, so if he gets it correct, I'll give you the cheering.
Cheering, all right. What's your aggressive error margin, Johnson?
Well, your aggressive error margin, you know, it's the ideal amount of, you know, times you come to the net. It's, you know, ideally you want to be winning 2 out of 3 points at the net, which equates to 66% of the points you win. And if you're able to keep that up a whole match, you would win 6-0, 6-0 every time.
Look at the big brains.
Give the guy some. Give the guy some applause there. Yeah, you know, actually, through every level of tennis, you know, Roger Federer, this is almost verbatim. It's frightening. He's talking about Wimbledon. It's frightening at this level of play that I know when I'm returning serve that less than 2% of the time my opponents are coming to the net. But no, all the way to Wimbledon. Yep. You know, 2 out of 3, 4 out of 6, 8 out of 12. You know, we always tease and say, you know, that kid only goes to the net to pick up balls and shake hands. Roger Federer again. Only good things happen when you go to the net. Roger Federer again. If you can't volley, you won't go to the net. Learn how to volley.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're at 25%, Johnson. 25. You get 1 for 1. Let's go with the 2-bounce rule.
Oh, it's easy. Come on.
Well, the 2-bounce rule, it's pretty simple. So as seen in your videos, when you're explaining the 2-bounce rule, you'll put a line of tennis balls from the single service line all the way back to the fence. And ideally you want your ground strokes to not have the second bounce be outside of that line. Because you'll be giving them more angle. And if you keep it inside the line, they'll have less angle.
Okay. We'll give that to you. For sure. You did say single service line. I know that you're too young to have senior moments, but
oh, I thought I said sideline.
Did you say sideline? We can better about. But you could add that if you're in the defense or neutral area of the red zone, if you obviously can run around your backhand inside the court, spread the court. You know, I think a lot of people that we coach think we're saying never ever run around your forehand hit a backhand, but. You don't want to do it where you're making the tennis court an aircraft carrier and going further and further back. I'll tell you a quick story from that. Danny Cooper is a lawyer now in Montreal. He spent maybe 15 years on the inside with us hitting balls and learning how to teach. And we were in Surabaya, Indonesia, and the players will bet on anything. And those lines were on the court because if you were playing for money, one team couldn't miss long. They could hit the ball. They could only lose the point if they hit in the net or wide. So they were just teeing off the ball in the fence, towards the fence. You had to play it, which I thought was clever. But having those lines, it's amazing how many kids, they don't get the racket below the ball, and they shift their head. They think the tennis courts, they don't know the tennis court is less than 20 degrees wide.
Yeah.
So they're not contact-oriented. They're target-oriented. So they end up pulling, horizontal swing, merry-go-round, ball rotates like a frisbee. And they hit that side mark, the intersection. This is not part of the test, Johnson, but how far is it? You know, when you hit cross court to the baseline corner and then cross court to the side tee. What are those two numbers, Johnson? Any music?
Are you asking?
Like, yeah, so cross court. How wide is a singles court cross court?
From corner to corner.
Corner to corner is 82.5 feet.
You got that. All right. Well, that wasn't one of the four questions. You know, we're just having a conversation here. So he's 2 for 2.
Give him a little bit
of love. Okay. I need to do more of that. I understand. So now what's the number when you pulled and you hit to the side tee?
When you hit straight ahead?
No, you go across court and you don't get below the ball. You open up.
Sorry. That would be 65.9.
Wow. Johnson. The listeners should know that we did not prepare him for this. Not over, I guess we have for several years now.
Yeah.
So you're 2 for 2. All right. this was not founded by Ivan Lendl, but a coach I worked with for a long time, he came up with, he said he studied so many of Lendl's matches. What is the Ivan Lendl grid?
So the Ivan Lendl grid uses the letters A, B, and C, you know, and Ivan Lendl grids for shot placement. So close to the middle of the court, you have, there's an A target on the left side of the court and A on the right. And then you go out a couple more feet and then you have B and B. And then you find yourself closer to the sideline and you have C and C. And when you're far behind the court or you're pulled out wide, you want to be able to hit to the A cone, to reduce their angle and give you a chance to get in the point. And when the rally's neutral, you can go A and B. And then when you have the chance to hurt your opponent and get your feet inside the court, that's when you can look to hit to the C cone.
Johnson nailed it again, 3 for 3. So you have the IQ and the EQ, the emotional or the intellectual quotient and the emotional quotient. We're telling players, parents all the time is that I think of Munaf Patel, his daughter, we trained her for years.
She was at that
she went to that camp in Germany. I worked with her through Mackler, but I mean, I spent hours and hours working with her. She's on the tennis team as a scholarship at UNC. But her father would say to me, because, you know, it's upsetting to me that these kids can all answer the questions when they're sitting down, but when they can actually play, you know, so it's one thing to know it sitting in a chair, but do you actually know it in match play? So you're 3 for 3, Johnson. That means you got a C, 75.
Sure.
You could get this next one wrong.
You know, rooting for you.
For you to get an A+, you have to use a one word. You know, you could get 100, but for you to get beyond 100, you have to use one word. But define short ball range.
This is the most complicated one. All right. So short ball range, it tells you whether you can approach down the line or cross court due to your court position. And short ball range is about 21 feet long, and it depends on your stride, how long your strides are, and depends on your speed. And, you know, it's roughly 7 steps of 3 feet. So what does this mean? So if I'm approaching down the line, you know, you're going to be right behind the ball. And you're going to like split step and you're moving right behind the ball. If you approach cross court, you're moving at a diagonal. So you're still moving to the ball. And so say you're hitting an approach shot and you're close to the single sideline and you hit the approach shot cross court. Well, for you to cover cover the court, you're going to be, if you hit that approach cross court, you're going to have to cover a lot more court rather than if you went down the line. So what it's saying is if you're going to approach cross court, you have to cover more, you know, there's more court to cover. So you need to get inside the court more and be closer to the net. But if you approach down the line, you can be closer to the sideline. You don't have to be as far in the court. And the way it works is, it's kind of, in a way, it's a sphere and it creates it's a triangle. It's hard to describe without a court, but you create a diagram and within this triangle, it shows you where you need to be hitting the approach cross court and down the line.
Bingo. I'd give him more love.
I'll give him some applause on that.
Yeah.
But I was going to, hold on. Let's let it go.
4 for 4.
I was going to say, Johnson, if you were to describe that in as least amount of words possible to give somebody a definition of the short ball range is the number of what to get to where.
The number of steps to get to the net.
Well, or to
GVP.
There you go.
Yeah, we have those 7 concepts for single strategy. We could try to wow people and make it 77, but we call them emotional anchors. So GVP, for our good listeners, you position. Come in, good volume position. That comes from Peter Burwash. So you split step halfway between the service line and the net, and then there's a giant letter V, and you're moving. And we know that when you split step, you know, it's just, it's been proven in research that just 1 foot lands when you veer off to the right. But initially, we just practice it where you organize your feet, organize your hands.
Yeah.
But no, that's excellent. Yeah, obviously you understand. It is difficult to explain verbally without having a board. The word I was looking for, so you get 100, Johnson, but the word I was looking for was radius, half the diameter. So you take, you say it is 21 feet approximately. You take a rope that's 21 feet, and you describe the downline approach shot up the percentage line to the inside of the percentage post. And the listeners should know what we've done is just dummied it down where there's a language. So you're playing going up 21 feet. So the person at GVP is holding that, and you're 21 feet back, 7 steps. And then you just start walking on a diagonal. You just start walking like you're playing a cross-court approach shot. Cross-court approach shot is very, very effective. Now, we give out a test with 15 questions, and it's not to make anybody feel bad, but it's just to make a point. And it's not really written with trickery, but, you know, use the word always, for example. Should you always go up the line, true or false? And many people, beginning coaches that we train, true. But no, that's great. Let's have Andy, why don't you ask a few questions? Like, what are you working on right now with your game, Andy? Why don't you ask him?
Well, one thing also that I, you know, we'll talk about, you know, you're going to UCLA. It's great. On my mind was, when did you kind of know, or did you guys have a plan, you and your dad, where you kind of mapped things out, or did things just kind of happen step by step? Or did you go, okay, hey, you know, we're looking long-term vision. We would, you know, we got to have the educational things in line, and then we would like to try to do college tennis, and then pro tennis is the dream. I mean, did you guys have a bit of a roadmap or have a plan, or does it just kind of come year by year? Well, I think I'm liking tennis more. I'll keep playing. Or how was that for you guys?
Well, I mean, there was a plan when I was younger. I mean, every kid who's young, who's like 12 years old, always says, you know, they want to play pro tennis.
Yeah.
You know, that's just, you know, kids say that. I mean, the older I get, you know, you'll find a lot less kids who say that. But, you know, I always said, you know, I want to be able to go to college tennis, and then I want to pursue pro tennis. So, I mean, in a way, I guess there was a plan, but it wasn't really stressing on it every day.
Yeah. No, I know when I was a young kid, it was like, hey, you know, I really liked Andre Agassi and wanted to play pro tennis, but I didn't really have, you know, we say with the great base, a system of systems. It is really, it's an organized plan, and it's a roadmap to success. But then there's the other side, is the academic side of things. But if you just know, hey, you know, I'm going to try to get to play big time college tennis, there's everything involved on the tennis side, but then also on the academic side. So it's great that you've been able to follow that map, even if there wasn't, you know, a super clear one, as far as the, where you're going to play and all that.
Well, I think that we could talk to your dad about that next week too.
Yeah.
But
no, as far as your game. Yeah. What are some of the things you're working on now? I mean, I know some of the things you're working on now, but why don't you tell our listeners some of the things that you're working and focusing on now?
Yeah. So, you know, I'd say coming from high altitude tennis, the hardest thing to learn for me was, my ability to just stay calm and stay in the rally. And, you know, since I've been here, I've been playing a lot more tennis. I've really been focused on having, you know, more circular strings, more circular swings, and, you know, strokes that aren't going to break down under pressure. 'Cause I always had a tendency of, you know, hitting the ball, you know, in somewhat of a slap way. So recently I've really been focusing on, you know, getting my racket below the ball and brushing and having height. You know, but to every positive and negative, you know, for me personally, when I start working on something, I'll get really fixated on it, and I'll be shadow swinging that particular shot in a match. And, you know, I'd say as of my game right now, I need to work on coming in a lot more. I'd say, you know, I've been taught all court tennis, and You know, applying pressure and finishing points in a point ending situations, my strength and my serve. And I think those are, you know, things I need to hold true to whenever I play. So as of right now, I'm working on, you know, improving my net appearances and just making that more important.
Yeah, it's great. No, separate yourself from the masses. There's a lot of players out there in the world that are great from the baseline, but not so many that can play all around the court.
Well, we talked about you being the baby and the best, myself being the youngest, the best comes last. But when you said where you are, you referred to where you're practicing now, the environment, you're in Southern Cal, you're down there with your parents, you went down there with the pandemic. But also, too, is that Jimmy Johnson, we're going to have Spencer Johnson on podcast one, podcast two, Joey Johnson. But we're going to really save it for Jimmy Johnson last, because the best comes last. But their list is Jimmy. I've known Jimmy for a long time. Joey played at this 2 year school. Then he went on and played at an SEC school. But Joey played at Tyler Junior College. It was it was an immigration center for kids from all over the world to win a national championship, after a national championship. But Joey sent Jimmy to the program, so I've started training Jimmy, and he runs a very successful camp in
Advantage
Orange County. With anything else on his game, Andy?
No, it's great to hear that you're coming in. I mean, with your size being left-handed, I think we've given you that advice many times where you just got to keep forcing. And you've heard what some of the best players in the world, Roger Federer, have said. I know Vic Braden used to always talk about, you know, tennis is, you want to be intimidating. You know, you want to get in people's heads. You want to disrupt the signal from the brain to the muscles. And you do that by putting pressure on people.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's great to hear that. And obviously working on a little more spin.
Yeah, when it comes down to
Sea level.
It comes down to playing pro tennis. I think a lot of young American players, I've advised so many young American players, okay, depending on your level, maybe summer number one in between your freshman and sophomore year that you play some ITA tournaments. But summer number two, you go over and you just play amateur tournaments in France.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times people, well, I'm going to build my pro career during the summer, and it's pretty difficult to do that. I think you, you're best to try to play on all surfaces if you want to be a really good tennis player. With, but no, I think we'll come back to your game. Let me just say a few things about UCLA. You know, when I grew up, my parents, I was born in this small town, Potsdam, New York, right up by the Canadian border. Then we moved 150 miles south, and I was a hockey player. I was only, I wasn't even 10, but I was telling my father, we're moving the wrong way. I said, why can't we move to Canada? But I can remember watching UCLA football. I mean, I could just, I think of Gary Beeman, who won the Heisman, number 16, because UCLA was big time. And you would be able to watch, you know, UCLA sports. But then John Wooden came along, and there's UCLA football. UCLA, I looked this up. They've had over 400 players, 400 athletes be Olympians.
That's awesome.
They have 253 medals. I lived in Southern Cal, and I
think I lost him. Sorry.
Hello, hello, hello.
We'll get him back on the line.
We'll get him back on. Should I sing a song while we wait?
Sure.
With, no, just talking about UCLA to our listeners.
Hello.
You're there?
I'll hold on just a minute. Get you on here.
This is where Andy could edit this little interruption. No. He's so good.
It's all good. We got you. Someone tried to call in, listeners, and
you guys off. I lived in Southern Cal, but I can remember going in to watch, and I had the awe factor, like, wow, this is John McEnroe playing Elliot Telcher. McEnroe was at Stanford. You knew there were going to be future stars because McEnroe had got to the semis of Wimbledon before he ever went to Stanford.
Yeah.
Wow. I can remember going to the track and watching John Walker. You know, that's one thing about the UCLA campus, even the tennis. I mean, it's a lot of pro players practice with the UCLA team. Yeah. I mean, it's LA. It's a happening place. But John Walker was the first person to break a 350 mile.
Wow.
Actually, through the Vic Braden Tennis College, Gail Godwin, she worked for Vic. I didn't get to know her really well, but I taught at her place up in Colorado. She was running a Vic Braden ski school and a Vic Braden tennis school. She was a coach at UCLA.
Yeah.
Mary Lay, who was Vic's head coach for the longest time, she played at UCLA. You know, I think I've got this down in my notes. Arthur Ashe played at UCLA. Won singles and doubles. Obviously went on to win Wimbledon US Open. He was a freshman. And when he was a freshman, the rule just changed shortly after Arthur. Because Jimmy Connors, when he was a freshman, he won the NCAAs playing for UCLA. He just played 1 year, one and done. But Arthur, his freshman year, a freshman couldn't play. They had to just work on their game. Jimmy Connors, you know, for me, I don't think of Jimmy Connors as being old. It was just fixated like Jimbo and Arthur Ashe. But just to let our listeners know, Jimmy, he won 3 out of 4 Grand Slams in 74. In 74, he had signed up to play with the Baltimore Banners. And he was banned because of that. He didn't get to play the French. Billy Martin, your coach, I remember watching him play. When he was 15 years old, I would bet dollars to donuts. He might have been 16, but 99% sure he was 15 years old. He went 5 sets at Forest Hills on grass against Stan Smith, US mm-hmm. Open. He's a pretty quiet guy, but people would argue that he has the best junior record ever. And, you know, he had success as a pro, but he had bad hips, and he didn't last very long. I also think that Billy Martin was the first player younger than Borg to beat Borg. I'd have to double check that. You could ask him that. He won't tell you unless you ask him. there's a girl there right now, Abby Forbes. I always used to tease her father. You're the real Roger. Her father's name is Roger. I filmed her twice, made videos for her twice. She worked with us just a little bit. She worked with Matt and Chris Klor. But she's on the team, and she's a fighter. She's an athlete. I think of Robin Anderson, who we worked with. Her last year in high school, she spent her last spring semester working with us. She was already number 1 in the country, but she came to work on her back end. And every school in the country wanted Robin Anderson. And I remember there's different polls, but UCLA with public universities, Michigan, UCLA are usually 1 and 2 with public universities. Mm-hmm. But here's a UCLA story. I'm sure you've heard the name Craig Tiley. He's somebody that was with us for 7 years, and he started as a tennis. He started as director of instruction, and then the tennis coach was terminated. So then, on an interim basis, he was a tennis coach, and he spent 10 Christmases at our place. So,
really,
a guy by the name of Robert Janicek, Canadian. Mm-hmm. With my former wife, we took our 2 young boys. They were interested in playing hockey. We went to Toronto to live, and Janicek had stopped playing, and he wanted to be trained on how to coach. So we were working with him, but he went to UCLA. He was number 2 in the country. And this comes back to the off factor. Mm-hmm. I remember giving Tiley a copy of Robert Janicek's technical tape. So we're just showing, I could elaborate upon it now. I still have it in the library. Mm-hmm. But just so the Illinois guys, because that's when Tiley's team was just climbing, and they weren't even playing against those schools. They weren't getting to the NCAAs. They weren't even getting in the tournament when he first went there. But it's like, okay, here's a guy that you just don't need to be intimidated. I think a lot of times, it's been said by many experts that 7 out of 10 matches are predetermined. They're over before they even start. But here, Max Cressy, UCLA, he was here when you were here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say that I'm going to guess, I know your father is, 6'5", pretty close, that Max Cressy's 6'7". I'm going to guess that you're not going to be as tall as him. Now, another player that probably is a weak word, Johnson. You should say you want to bet, but anyway, Mackenzie McDonald, during the pandemic, he spent 19 days here. And, you know, he'd been here with Matt Cloro coaches and before that. But here's something too, Mackenzie McDonald with the UCLA, and like Arthur Ashe, he won singles and doubles at the NCAA. I'm going to say that I don't think that you're ever going to be as fast as Mackenzie McDonald.
Hey, what you could do, Johnson, is you start doing 1,000 calf raises a day.
This guy's quick. But the thing is that, but you just objective, say, well, that's why you're going to narrow the court. That's why you're going to play going forward more, because I'm not going to be as fast as Mackenzie McDonald. But you're going to, yeah. Not to pick on Lindsay Davenport, she became number one in the world. But when she was number one in the world, I told many girls, I said, you know, you're slow, but I think you're faster than Lindsay Davenport. I mean, if you hit the ball as big and as deep as she did, you know, it's just being a little sensationalistic. But I think with, say, Max and Mackenzie, you know, actually, Max, I mean, a great guy, hard worker, passionate. He, his father is French, his mother is American. She was on USC, you know, your enemy at UCLA. She was on 2 national championship teams as a volleyball player. But I remember Marcos Baghdatis said, hey, there's this guy you should work with. But at that, prior to making that decision, Max was working through Matt Clore with the USTA. Andy did some work with the USTA and traveled with Max. And then Max was here when you were here. And but I would just make a checklist shot by shot. And it's like, okay, this is how these two guys hit the forehand volley. And there's not a right or wrong, but there's tennis math. You know, what do they have to calculate? How clean do they hit their forehand volley? And the same thing with your forehand ground stroke. In the end, everything is comparative. I think that's one a problem that people have is that they, you know, sometimes they're only comparing themselves to the house next door or the kid next to them. But, so I would say over the years, I mean, I still, when I see just that blue and gold, it's like, wow, UCLA, that's big time.
For me, I lived in Westwood for 2 years. I don't know if you knew that, Johnson, but I used to, you know, walk up through the village and run the stairs at the track there and used to watch a lot of the people work out, a lot of the track team work out. But I trained there as a junior tennis player for a couple of years, and my mom was a Bruin. She was actually the homecoming queen and the basketball queen when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Lew Alcindor, was there. But, you know, at the time, I didn't really have a plan. I got a later start in tennis, but I didn't think about playing college tennis. One of my missions is really to try to get what we do, because I know that it works out there, and for people to get a great start into tennis and then also build fundamentals that'll get them to where they want to go.
I'll tell you another UCLA story. So you trained with Victor Lilov. You know, he started with us when he was 8, and his sister came accompanying him. So they were living with us, and his sister was really helping him out. And she's a scholar, but she was, you know, had some time, and you know, we taught her to chart matches, but it was the NCAAs. And now with streaming, she was charting matches, and she said, everybody's playing the same. And I just said to her out of the blue, I said, why don't you just start watching, zero in on Marcus Giron? He won the tournament. Mm. And, you know, I know he's had a lot of bad luck with injuries. My son, Connor, he won some doubles tournaments with Marcus. But, have to just have the best work ethic and just keep trying to get better. And let's talk a little bit about your timetable. We can wrap this up on a few more things. But two types of pro players. You're a teenage sensation or you're a late bloomer. And with college tennis, I think you're a blue chip or you're a project player. And, there's it used to be 20, now it's 25 kids per class are, a blue chip. Mm-hmm. And then there's 5-star, 4-star. We had the Dartmouth coach here the other day. You know, he just wants to learn. Someone said, hey, come hang out with, or go hang out with these guys. And just quizzing him or interviewing him, asking him questions. Amazing story. He was a 3-star.
Really?
Yeah, Matt Clore wasn't here that day, but I just said, well, here's a pro, you know, I remember you probably met Michael Ogden, you know, he was a 3-star, big, strong kid, hard worker, And, you know, he may have been like really close to being a four-star, but, you know, people who go and go on to play Division I tennis with, you know, I remember meeting you with your Gaddami. When you meet someone at age 11 and they've got to totally change their game, go back to the drawing board, and they're living in Utah and they're not all in, it's like this kid's not going to be a teenage sensation. But with that, I mean, how many teenage sensations are there? You know, Federer doesn't consider himself a teenage sensation. Nadal is 5 years younger, and Roger, what did Roger say? And Roger said, there was no way when I was 17, 18, that I was mature as he was. But, you know, you take care of nutrition, you take care of fitness, and UCLA, obviously, so progressive. You know, you just want to, obviously, wish for good health, but you got to work for good health. But what an opportunity to go to UCLA. But I would say, you know, you're on that path to be a late bloomer, but actually in the end, I always think a lot of times people are rushing the process and it's kind of like they're going in circles. I mean, the turtle wins the race, not the rabbit. Mm-hmm. But why don't you tell us a little about you plan on, after you finish this year, you're going to go on a mission. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, you know, growing up as, you know, as a member of the LDS Church, you know, something that you see them do is they serve, you'll see a lot of kids, at 18 years old, go serve a 2-year mission. And, that's something that I've wanted to do since I was younger. And, you know, talking to Billy, I told him, you know, I wanted to serve a mission and I wanted to do it right after high school so I could go play all my years at college. And, you know, he was totally okay with that. And, you know, the mission for me, it'll be a great experience. It's 2 years that I get to do, you know, missionary work, and, you know, I get to kind of forget about myself and just serve people and, you know, try to just become a better person and just kind of lose myself in the work. And, you know, I'm really excited to do that. You know, I mean, I'm going to, you know, I'm still growing. I think, you know, 2 years down the road, I think my body's going to fill out and, you know, mentally and physically, I'll be more mature and, you know, ready for college tennis. And I'm really excited to have that opportunity.
That's great. It's great you made that decision. To do that too, not an easy decision. I made the same decision right after some college tennis, and it's life changing. And I think, you know, you're going to serve others, but you're going to get more out of it. Usually, that's the way it works. When you serve others, you're the one that gets more out of it. It works that way. But yeah, you'll have some time to mature physically, mentally, emotionally, and I'm sure you're going to have a lot of great stories coming out of that. And you know, you'll have the time there where you can take a racket and shadow swing and go through all your routines. You'll be busy, but you will have some time to stay in form.
No, I think your parents have done a great job. I mean, your character, a lot of positives. But I do think with maturity, physical, mentally, emotional, Latter-day Saints, I'll have to get this one in. I was teaching a clinic in Utah with Tommy Fye, great coach, Rick Braden coach. We were staff members together, and a woman asked me if I was LDS. And at the time, you know, I'd spent a lot of time in academia, and I thought she meant learning disabled student. So he gave me the elbow. But, but no, service, you know, as a kid who grew up in the Catholic religion, I do remember telling you, Johnson, about service. I go, Johnson, I'm a better Mormon than you are. Get over here. but anyway, with the time that you're away from tennis, you know, obviously, you know, I think it was great as you're going to be wrapped up in helping other people out. But when it comes down to the brain will take you back to where you left off. And when it comes down to, you know, visual training, yeah, you know, you're going to fill out, but is there time for you to do the Royal Mounted Canadian Police where it's like, okay, I got time to do 1 minute of straight push-ups. I get time to do 1 minute of straight sit-ups, 1 minute of straight squat thrusts. Yeah. You know, and you just, you come back. I think of Roger Staubach, It wasn't through service through the church, but it was a service through the country where he went to Annapolis. And I believe it's 7 years where he didn't play football after he played for Navy. He didn't play for 7 years. He came back and, you know, he won the Super Bowl, I think more than once, but he won the Super Bowl for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, the motor programming will stay with you. It's not going to go away.
Yeah, I think that Billy, in the press release where he said that your resume is, you know, not, you know, I think he said perhaps your resume is perhaps not as impressive as other UCLA recruits in the past, but he thinks you have a special upside. I know I did talk to Matt Clore, who talked to Billy for you, but you hit the ball so much better than most kids, but you can't rest. And again, you don't want to compare yourself to most kids. But no, it's been great to have you on. Why don't we give the guy one more round of applause? Got 100 on the test.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think my last question for you is, if you were just to give some general advice to junior players coming up that have the goal of playing college tennis, or we could even say big time college tennis, because that's UCLA is a big time school. What advice would you give to junior tennis players?
You know, if I could, you know, give advice to people who want to, you know, chase after, you know, playing college tennis, I'd say, you know, really, you know, what you put into it is what you get out of it. And, you know, sometimes people think they're working hard, you know, but they're hardly working. You know, it's all about, I'd say, you know, the intent behind routines needs to be so key, because I remember being really little, you know, getting back from my first camp at Steve's, and I was like, yeah, I got my routines, I'm gonna start doing them, you know. Next thing you know, I have a TV show going while I'm shadow swinging, you know, and
yeah,
that's just, it just doesn't work that way. You need to be, you know, switched, you know, we use the term, you need to be switched on, you know, there needs to be an intent behind what you're doing so you can actually build myelin. And, you know, another thing, I'd say, is, having a healthy balance in life has been really important for me. You know, being able to separate yourself from your tennis and just know that, like, you know, depending on, you know, say you're having bad results and, you know, there's, you know, I've seen a lot of people do this, is their tennis is so connected to who they are as a person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they're having bad tennis results, you know, they feel bad about themselves and, you know, they, you know, just emotionally just too attached. And I think, you know, you need to be able to separate yourself from your tennis, you know. I mean, just for me, that's in my personal experience, that's been really important for me, just being able to separate who I am as a person. You know, my tennis is not who I am, but, you know, it's the thing I do the most and I love it. And if you can find that healthy balance, I think, you know, you'll be able to stay in the sport a lot longer. And, you know, having you as a mentor, and Andy, you having, you know, meeting you and getting to work with you, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity that you guys have given me to have, you know, have tennis knowledge and to, you know, give me a shot to be able to, you know, pursue my tennis at the highest level. And, you know, Steve, you've really mentored me over the past, you know, my junior career, and I really appreciate that.
Oh, it's great.
No, you're more than welcome.
It's great advice too.
You know, a couple of things. What you just said is that it is a game. You know, can you hit the yellow ball between the white lines? I remember Steve Wurtzman, he's father of Mark and Jeremy Wurtzman, and I worked with both boys, but only a little bit with Mark, because by the time I met him, he was already in college. But just like you, I met Jeremy, who's a little kid. He's on our course, Tennis Intelligence Applied. I mean, he's ranked one in the NCAAs, coaches at Indiana now. But I remember Steve Wurtzman say, there's so many mixed messages. You know, we're telling people, all right, get up in the morning and do yoga and shadow swing in front of the mirror. And you know, there's so many routines. You can't do all of them, but when it comes down to it, it is just a game. And it shouldn't be a matter that, well, okay, I'm a lesser person and, you know, I'm really down on myself because I lost a tennis match. Is that, and I think if people come to terms with that, they can just become a better competitor. You know, Jimmy Connors, UCLA boy, mm-hmm. the greatest thing in life is to play tennis and win. The second greatest thing is to play tennis and lose.
Yeah.
You know, one thing about your game, you've had so many people watch you. I think of Stephen Lang, who runs Tennis Memphis. And, you know, he obviously, all you got to do is watch him play tennis. I mean, he can just, he's one of, you know, he plays so much tennis. You know, he'd go 5 years and not pick up a racket and then just like, wow, this guy, you could just tell he's a really good tennis player. But he's just one person of many. It comes to mind, you know, you were out there with a group and, you know, you might have been dropping sets and whatever. He goes, I like that kid's game. You know, because, you know, people like Steven, they just go, okay, this guy has got a very good service motion. And you can play big. I think from the comment, like people that have, you know, they just watched your game and they've always liked it. But you need to impose your will. You need to, if I would just give you one tip, is that Welby Van Horn, we're talking about him last week, is, you know, everybody finds their own game style. Everybody brings their personality into it. And, you know, I think you always want to, you know, say, okay, Johnson, always be a golden retriever off the court. But when you step on the court, you can't be a golden retriever. I mean, I don't think there's probably anybody better to say, you know, Stefan Edberg. You know, they named the Sportsmanship Award after him. And, you know, everybody loves Stefan Edberg. So everybody loves a golden retriever. But, you know, when you step on the court, you know, maybe it's more like a pit bull or, you know, the watchdog, the whatever. But no, it's been great to talk to you. With Annie, anything else?
Well, no, I don't know if your dad is still on the line.
Yeah, is Joey still there?
I'm still here.
Okay.
Joey.
He went for a walkabout.
Joey, the kid did well. We'll have to pat him on the back.
I appreciate the time. And I don't know if you wanted to add any extra words, Joey, but we are going to talk to you next week as well.
Yeah, you know, I think it's been interesting just kind of hearing the questions and kind of the interaction. It's a long journey, you know, that's the thing. It's I have five kids, and I never really set out to make any of my kids tennis champions or whatever you want to call that. You know, tennis was always a fun thing in our family, and all my kids played, and they all, the other four were kind of, I would say they're all really good athletes, and they're, you know, one of the benefits Spencer's had from them is just they're all very hard workers.
Yeah.
And in everything, and my wife is an extremely hard worker and very driven, and you know, and he had the benefit of witnessing that over those years. And you know, I ended up coaching all my kids in high school, and it was really fun. You know, they all went to the state tournament. I mean, it was, I would call it, you know, pretty recreational, fun tennis. And I think there's a lot of fun memories. I never thought one of my kids would really want to take it to that deeper level. So it was a bit of a surprise, but it's been, it's been fun just kind of hearing them interact and talk through the questions and just, you know, the process and the experience that this has all been. And, you know, and I've enjoyed it. I mean, I've enjoyed it. We'll talk more about that next week, but
yeah, I'm sure.
Appreciate it. All that you guys do.
Well, thanks, Joey. Thanks. One to wrap it up. I do think that, Vic Braden, you know, you need to be an independent thinker. You need to be a problem solver. And I hope the listeners realize now that, Spencer has an education and he needs to now continue to learn, be a lifelong learner, but, you know, it's what you do with the information. Yeah. I think in America, American tennis, junior tennis, I think we have the ratio reversed, the pat on the back versus the kick in the fanny, kick in the butt. But no, I think Spencer, I think you did an outstanding job. We'll give you a pat on the back, but we'll never stop giving you kicks in the butt. But guys, Joey, I look forward to talking to you next week. And Spencer, great job.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, you guys.
Thank you, Coach. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your guys' podcast.
And tell us one more time, what happens to an opportunity? Do you know? This is one of those mind.
I don't think I've heard this one.
you don't lose an opportunity, somebody else takes it. So, I mean, you have amazing opportunity to be going to UCLA. And, you know, there's no replay when it comes to life. You just got to go for it. But let's give the guy some applause and we'll sign off. All right, Johnson and Johnson. Buddy.
This one's for you.
And don't forget Uncle Jimmy. We have to go with the the best comes last, Johnson. Yeah. All right, guys.
I'm excited.
All right, thanks.
Thank you,
Coach. We'll talk to you next week, Jimmy. Thanks. All right.
Okay.
Adios. Bye-bye. Well, it was great. Got some insight there. Hopefully our listeners enjoyed that. And, you know, a little different this week with a junior tennis player, but
yeah, you know, future. Opinions do come into it. Okay, what's your opinion? But really, initially, again, another Braden theme, you know, the dimensions of the court, physical laws dictate stroke production, no coach's opinion or any unique theory.
Yeah.
So everybody has an opinion, but we talk about Braden so many times. The umpire eventually will say, ready, play. Right. So, I think that an expression for Spencer based on how he's been trained is his best tennis is ahead of him.
Yeah.
Many, many kids are good enough to actually play Division I tennis, but because how they were trained as a kid, there's a lot of times where their best tennis is behind them.
Yeah, exactly. No, he's, you know, being left-handed, he's got some size, and then the all-court game, he's just going to get better and better.
Yeah, and he's got to play the tactics. It's got to force. But also, too, it just comes down to, like, why do we make those slow-motion videos, those narrated slow-motion analysis? Math. You have to have a long hitting zone.
Yeah.
Let the strings go towards the target. I mean, it's not witchcraft. I mean, you can't be, well, yeah, I'm swinging east to west, but the ball's going to go north and south. Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Thanks for listening. And then again, you can find us at greatbasetennis.com. You can find us on social media at greatbasetennis. We're posting every day on Facebook and also Instagram. So you can check that out. And then next week we'll be part two of the Johnson family, Johnson & Johnson. We'll talk to Joey Johnson, who is a mental toughness coach working on skills.
Worthy to win.
But yeah, appreciate it. And we'll see you in the next one.
Over and out.
Adios.